Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Monday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Had a good weekend, a good Father's Day. I did. I mean, I always do, but I mean, I got an extra special gift yesterday. Sort of fits in with the show. Matt got us tickets to the MLB game at Rickwood this Thursday night. The Cardinals and the Giants on Thursday night. So we'll be headed up to Birmingham on Thursday.
That should be fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a really cool event Major League Baseball is doing. They got a minor league game scheduled tomorrow. Birmingham and Montgomery are going to play tomorrow, and then on Friday Thursday. Thursday night you got the Cubs and the Cardinals playing the game live at
Giants and Cardinals.
What did I say?
Cubs.
Oh, so yeah, the Giants and the Cardinals playing the game live. And speaking of the Giants, Willie Mays.
Yep.
It was a big reason for the game is to honor Willie Mays. Unfortunately, Willie Mays announcing earlier today he is not going to be able to attend the game in person.
That's a shame.
93 years old. He's gonna watch the game from his home in the Bay Area, which is too bad as so much of it is a tribute to him. But it's not just about Willie Mays. It's also about the history of Rickwood and baseball in the South and in Birmingham.
Is Rickwood the oldest standing ballpark? I believe it is.
It's the oldest standing baseball. I believe there are other.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's what I meant.
Yeah, you go back to like Churchill Downs and some of the older sporting venues. Still in America. But no, yeah, Rickwood is the oldest ballpark still in existence, and baseball has renovated it extensively over the last year or so since this was announced. So yeah, it should be a really nice tribute to baseball history, and especially Alabama baseball, the Negro Leagues, and lots of the lots of the history that probably doesn't get acknowledged enough, all things considered, even though baseball does its best to pay tribute to such an important piece of history.
Oh yeah, I mean there are numerous Alabama natives in the Baseball Hall of Fame. So and of course the Say Hey Kid is right there at the top of the list. But yeah, so I hope everybody had a good weekend. We're here with you on this. It is a hot one. We could
you know what, you probably until it's we should we probably should just you can assume
I can,
it's
I
up.
Can I can record that every day.
You can assume, I mean, some, it's up. Yeah, you can assume it's a hot
may,
one.
Some days we may come in and it may be there may be thunderstorms.
You can assume it's going to be a hot one here for the next 100 days or so, maybe. You know, when Halloween decorations are in stores.
Oh, Halloween decorations. Sadly, Dan, haven't been in some stores.
I haven't, no.
There are Halloween decorations that are out.
Are we done already with that? I mean, I thought it was back to school season.
It's crazy. No, there's Halloween stuff out.
I guess we blow past back to school season.
Oh, yeah.
It's already
Halloween. Well, yeah, there's back to school / Halloween. But, yeah, it's going to be hot for at least three more months.
Summer starts, this weekend, by the way.
It does, but fall... But fall classes start before you know it.
Fall classes start about. Well, I believe in the sorority. I was talking to my little sister about this. The sorority rush, move in, is the first couple days of August.
Yeah, we're 6 weeks away from there being a lot of traffic on campus.
Yeah, if you're enjoying your summer vacation right now, cover your ears for the part where we say, yeah, we're about 6 weeks away from it being pretty clear that students are back. I don't know when the public high schools start back up in the area, but that's also, I think in the first half of August is when that gets going as well. So yeah, we're coming up on just about 6 weeks or so from the NBA draft next week. And then, I think it's next week. NBA draft next week. You got some, your various July sporting events, including SEC Media Days, and the All Star Game, which will be happening in the same place this year in Arlington, Texas. And then in August, it's all systems go for the start of football season.
Yeah, that is it's crazy how quickly it can get here. And speaking of football season, Auburn looking to continue to bolster the roster for the future, and a big recruiting weekend this past weekend, and it's Monday. That means Brian Matthews, B-Matt from from AuburnSports.com here in the studio with us. Brian, it was a busy and appears to be a pretty successful weekend for Auburn.
Oh, I think so. A dozen players were here. Auburn got a commitment from Eric Winters from Enterprise, a really big physical athletic safety.
Highly coveted, yes. No question, by Auburn.
Very highly recruited, and he committed Saturday during his official visit. We got to talk to him Sunday. I got that story up on the site if you'd like to see it. Auburn had the number one player in the country overall, five-star quarterback Julian Lewis, Juju Lewis, mm-hmm. Was in. I've heard the visit went well. He did not want to speak to reporters afterwards, which is not which is something – he doesn't speak to reporters a lot. So that was not a surprise, let's put it that way. And I think Auburn has positioned itself well with a number of the visitors. One to watch, I think, the closest is Herbert Scroggins, who's a very talented edge rusher.
Mm-hmm.
He's every bit of 6'2", 6'3", 240-ish.
He's the guy with an unusual nickname. Is that right? Is he?
He's – what is his nickname?
Is he third?
Yeah, that's right, third. Yeah, third, because he's Herbert Scroggins.
Yeah, I know.
Third. Yeah, yeah.
So but usually,
third, yeah.
Usually you're not just. Usually they're called Trey.
Yeah.
Or something like that. But
yeah, third. I love it.
But you watch this film, very physical. Got really nice speed and quickness and get off coming around that end there. And I think Auburn's put themselves in really good shape for him. Shamar, I know. I think Auburn, the cornerback from Carrollton. I think Auburn's in solid shape for him too. I think he has one more visit to go. Hollis Davidson, the tight end from Petrie City, who mm-hmm. was committed to Auburn. I think Auburn has a good chance of getting him back on board. We'll have to wait and see. And then they had a bunch of commits, too, and I think all those guys are pretty solid with Auburn right now. A few of them are going to take some more visits.
A few of them have said that's it, yeah, they're shutting it down.
Most of them have gone ahead and shut it down, so I think that's a really good sign, too.
Yeah, so we'll go a little more into detail on that. I mean, anything that's on your mind sports-wise, we'd love to hear from you. We apologize if you tried to get through to us on Friday. Actually, you could get through. You could get through to Drew and get on the air. We could not hear the callers. So
which complicates things.
It does.
A little. We considered drafting Drew as a translator,
yeah,
and having Drew then relay what the caller said to us.
And you could have just made stuff up.
Yeah,
Drew,
but
gotten both sides really mad at each other.
That would have required Drew to turn his mic on. So we weren't gonna make him.
Yeah, that's true.
That's I already had Drew play some bets for me, so the interpreter stuff is already it's already questionable. But no
habla inglés.
Really appreciate. I watched. I'll tell you what I watched during the commercial break. Really appreciate the folks at Sensegreen, right? And
absolutely.
And Moe's for having us on Friday. It was too bad we couldn't take calls, but had a great time there.
Yeah, good crowd.
I will. You know, I'll tell you about this, Bill. I will be back at Moe's and Bent Creek sometime to try some of that food, because it I mean, the venue, the dining room looks great.
Oh yeah,
I've heard nothing but good stuff about all the food they serve there. It's been a while for me, so I'm gonna go try that again soon. But thanks again to a Sense of Green and Moe's for having us on Friday.
All right, so you can join us, and we're expecting to be able to hear you if you do call in. No, we don't have any problem when we're here in the studio. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center. Again, all of that thanks to our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
As I said, I mean, anything you want to talk about sports-wise, I mean, quite a few different things going on. You've got the same situation as we had Friday, with the possibility of the NBA season being done. Now, the Mavs won, and boy, it's like, it's a shame. They're probably disappointed that the total points in the series don't count.
Oh, that we're not doing it Pythagorean. Yeah, we're not doing Pythagorean.
A win is a win.
No,
I mean, they have a win. They didn't get swept.
No, and you had the. I mean, the game got close in game one. When the Mavs, you know, cut into the big Celtics lead, and then you had the play at the end of game three, the foul on Luka that tossed him from the game, and the Celtics were able to build that 3-0 lead. I'm sure the Mavericks are looking at missed opportunities in games one and games three, where they wouldn't be down 3-1. The series could be closer to even. But instead, yeah, the Mavericks, I mean, I think a lot of folks expect the NBA season to end tonight in Boston with the Celtics, at home in game five on it with a chance to eliminate the Mavericks. If not, and the series goes back to Dallas, the door stays open.
That would
open.
Make it a whole lot more interesting. I think it's done. I say it's done.
Yeah, I mean, Dallas needs to win two games in Boston to win the series, including tonight. It seems unlikely they're going to be able to pull that off. In fact, I would put Boston as a healthy favorite tonight. But it's why they play the games. You never know. I mean, Dallas, pulled out their best performance last night in the last game. Did they empty the tank? Did they use did they use everything they have left to avoid the sweep in game four and beat the
Celtics? Well,
that's
what you have to do every game, and you just hope you can refill it a little bit.
I would say that, yeah, Celtics is heavy favorites tonight. Mm-hmm. A real missed opportunity for Boston if this series goes back to Dallas with the chance to stretch it to the full seven.
Meanwhile, College World Series continuing today with Florida staying alive, eliminating NC State. And the Gators will now take on the loser of tonight's Texas A&M Kentucky matchup. So you've got on one side that had three SEC teams and an ACC team. It's just three yep. SEC teams left. So you know there will be an SEC team in the finals. On the other side, now Tennessee is in great shape. They are unbeaten, and tomorrow they will take on Florida State. If they win, they're in. If they lose, they play again. Florida right. State has to beat Tennessee twice. Yeah.
The catbird seat, if yes. you will, for Tennessee. And, yeah. and that's the position the winner of tonight's...
Yeah. Right, the winner of the A&M Kentucky game.
Speaking of being a solid favorite, I would say the winner of tonight's A&M Kentucky game yep. and Tennessee go into, move into position as the solid favorites.
And,
of this
and who did we say last week when the field was set, it felt like Tennessee, Texas A&M, and Kentucky mm-hmm. were probably the top three teams. Those are the three teams that are unbeaten in the series.
And we're going to find, one of them's going to take a loss tonight, but it's going to be to the other one in right. A&M and Kentucky.
Man, what a great first 2 days.
Couldn't have
College World Series, every game was either decided on a walk-off or a great play to hold off a team at the bottom of the night. All four of the first 2 days were one-run games.
You had three walk-offs in the Florida and the Florida Texas A&M game, which had the home run theft by the A&M player in the. I mean, the highlight reel has been replenished at the College World mm-hmm. Series. Like they've got a couple of moments they can show forever from the first couple days of this thing. The home run to win the Tennessee game, the home run to win the Kentucky game, the play by the A&M outfielder to rob the Florida home run. Like there were so many moments from this first weekend that it's just college baseball at its best.
It really is. And I'll tell you what, we'll get to our first break, because when we come back, I want Brian to talk about, speaking of college baseball, Auburn is Auburn's making its move, making some moves through the transfer portal. Is it seven now? I think
seven,
it's seven
yes.
players Auburn has added through the portal, including some really impressive additions. We'll talk yes. about that and more. Again, love to hear from you. Anything on your mind sports-wise as we're just underway here on the Monday Drive.
Hey, this is Billy Plummer here with the Apex Pest Solutions.
ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian, Matthews, MauburnSports.com, Drew at the controls. Again, love for you to join in, 334-321-1390 or text us 334-564-1840. Brian, as I mentioned as we were going to our first break, Auburn has been busy. Auburn baseball has been busy in the transfer portal. They've added now, let's see, two pitchers, a catcher, a couple of infielders, an outfielder that I can just think of.
Three pitchers now.
Three pitchers? Okay.
The Lucas Steele can play catcher, play outfield.
He can play catcher first or outfield, right.
Yeah, switch hitter. Bristol Carter, who they just recently got.
Oh, that's right.
He can play center field and bat leadoff. Was a freshman All-American at East Carolina. Hit close to 350. And if you watch him, you can see that he's going to grow into more power.
Oh, okay. I have not watched any video on him. I just saw his numbers.
Yeah, I think he had maybe seven doubles, a couple home runs, but you can see he's got the pop in his bat eventually.
So he's a guy that could move there into center field?
Yeah, he's probably going to. And now you've got him and Kay Ballou,
right,
who can both play center.
It's great to have multiple guys that can play center field.
And also, importantly, I think for Auburn's lineup is Bristol's a right-handed bat.
Mm-hmm.
Which Auburn's got some really good left-handers, especially if Cooper McMorrie returns. And then they also got, as maybe their most talented target out of the portal pitching-wise, Mason, I think it's Koch.
Yeah, I believe it's Koch.
From Creighton.
He was one of the top names among pitchers in the portal, and that's really good to see Auburn able to get a player like that a lot of people wanted.
He was used out of the bullpen as a sophomore.
Give his strikeout to innings pitch numbers.
5-1, 3.29 ERA, 60 strikeouts and 38.1 innings.
60 strikeouts and 38 and a third. That's a lot of K's.
Those are closer numbers, but he is going to get an opportunity to be a starter. I think he wants to try to convert to that.
Right.
And so we'll see how that goes. But certainly
it's a big increase in innings. It could be a big increase in innings moving him to a starter.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's 14 plus strikeouts per nine innings.
Yep. Right. And I could see why with that sort of efficiency, I could see why they'd be interested in keeping him as a reliever. But also, if he's got starter stuff, then you kick the tires.
Well, now the pitcher from, is it Cal Baptist? Is another guy that was a reliever. I'm not sure if the plan is to, you know, give him a look at the rotation as well, but
Ryan
he's
Hetzler.
A guy that can help Auburn. What was his name?
Ryan Hetzler. He was 5-1 with a 2.59 ERA and four saves, had 38 strikeouts and 41 innings. But that was as a true freshman.
Right.
So you would expect him to be able to step up there. And that was also out of the bullpen, 25 appearances. So both these guys were bullpen guys, and I think both of them, at least early in the fall, we'll get looks.
They'll
at
get
starters.
A shot.
Yeah, yeah. But
the younger brother of the pair of brothers from the younger brother from LSU.
Yeah, Sam Dutton. He was just 1-3 with a 6.02 ERA, but
Tex says he has fabulous stuff.
Yeah,
Tex has pretty close and watches LSU baseball closely since he's a baseball guy and he's down there in Baton Rouge, but he really raved about Dutton's stuff.
Yeah, Dutton hadn't had a lot of innings yet, so coming to Auburn will give him an opportunity to really work on that and maybe tighten things up a little bit and have a chance to maybe have a breakout season here. So we'll see.
And then his brother is coming from Birmingham Southern as a grad transfer, I believe.
And of course, Birmingham Southern, you know, made a nice run there.
Yeah,
in the,
great story. Yeah. Shame that it ended.
It is. But he batted 340 with 12 doubles, 7 home runs, and 42 RBIs. I feel like he could be a second baseman type guy, you know, middle infielder. Could even play some corner outfield, too. So he has some versatility also.
Yeah, so is that all up? I mean, that's Eric Snow was the other one.
Yep. A guy who was All-American as a freshman. Mm-hmm. Had injuries his sophomore year that slowed him down a little bit, but very talented guy who could play shortstop or second.
Yeah, they've gotten, I guess three guys now who have been freshman All-Americans. A couple of them were freshman All-Americans in 23, another one this year. So Auburn a little more active, and they're jumping in there a little quicker this year in the baseball transfer portal.
And, of course, it helps that you know they're not competing right now.
That's true.
It's a lot tougher when you're
But still, I mean, some of these guys, I mean, doesn't matter if teams are competing or not. I mean, last year at this time, you were seeing, you know, LSU and other teams were in the portal were adding players.
Oh yeah, yes.
How much pressure or like you know where should the expectations be for next season's Auburn's baseball team coming off a season like the one they just had? I know that's a bit of an unfair question because they're still building the roster and figuring out who they're going to have. But I feel like a lot of the key contributors are on the team. Right. At this point, I could be wrong about that, but I would think at this point, you know, a lot. I mean, maybe they had a starter or two between now and the start of the season, but I would say, you know, what should people be expecting, and what's a fair amount of describe what you think the pressure should be on Butch to improve on this past season.
Well, they would like to add one more from the portal, preferably a left-handed starting pitcher with experience. If you look at the couple of seasons before this, they had really built up to being a, you know, and every year being in a regional and hosting regionals and getting to the point where they were going to be considered as a, you know, a top eight national seed. So I think they want to get it back competing to be a top eight, top 16 team and hosting regionals. And
yeah, I expect, I would think the expectations would be you're in the tournament next year and probably host, at least hosting a regional.
If you're not in the postseason next year,
that's a disappointment.
Disappointing season, and you're probably looking at back to back disappointing seasons.
Yeah, I would say so. That's not what the staff or Butch or anybody wants for this program. So, and of course, you know, Plains and Park is getting a major facelift over the offseason. That'll be most of it will be done for the start of next year. I think there's some small stuff they got to do for the following year, but it's going to be really nice over at the park too. So I think they'd love to welcome the new places, the new people, and you know, the new boxes and stuff with a good season.
And I talked to Adam Cole a bit this weekend. And Adam Cole was there covering for the OA News. He was there for, I think, pretty much every home baseball game, watched a ton of the team this year, and he was struck by, like, it does, and some of the final scores would weaken this argument some, but he didn't think the team was that far away. I mean, a lot of competitive losses in league play, and you know, if you can turn some of those around, then the win-loss record, I mean, I guess
Auburn had a bad habit of not being able to shut a team down when they scored. I mean, Brian, wouldn't you agree there? It seemed like
put out the fire
when Auburn would score. Invariably, it seemed like the other team would answer. Yeah. And that's where you've got to be able to, you know, put up some zeros.
Had a hard time starting pitchers to get deep into games, put a lot of pressure on the bullpen. The bullpen was very inconsistent. And then just when you thought the pitching staff, they had made changes, was coming around, then they had some major injuries to some key players in the lineup, which really stymied their offense. And so it's just kind of one thing building on the other that, you know, neither of them were good.
Let's get to the Drive hotline, 334-321-1390. Go ahead. You're on the Drive. Who are we talking to? Hey, can you hear us?
Yeah, this is Wes.
Hey, Wes. Yeah, we got you fine.
Okay, great. Hey, listen, I have maybe a question and a comment, I guess, but I have two grandsons that are 11 years old. So they play 11U baseball.
Uh-huh.
One plays here in Auburn, and the other one plays over in Mississippi.
Okay.
So I watch all the games here in town or in the community, and then I go over to Mississippi, and he plays in places like Grenada, Winona. We were in Stark, Vegas 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
We were in Tupelo this past Saturday. And here's the thing. Those ballparks, even at Tupelo, have all turf infields, natural grass outfields, and those parks are beautiful. And I can't understand how Mississippi, and especially Tupelo, what, that's like 35,000 people, and it puts the softball complex a shame out there in off of exit 51.
Yeah, I that's a really good question. I'm not sure if the lottery or anything would have anything to do with that.
Is that something you think communities have decided to build in a way to sort of,
I mean, that's,
you know,
great.
To bring tourism and things like that? I mean, I don't know. I have no answers for the amount of investment in little league and travel baseball.
Travel baseball is huge, and it's huge everywhere. I mean, it's no way that
Georgia, right?
Georgia is, yeah, I mean, Atlanta, but there's plenty. I mean, there's so many teams in the state of Alabama. That's a really good question, Wes. I don't know the answer. That's a shame. I mean, I know there's some really nice facilities around, but yeah, they're not like you described the ones over in Mississippi.
Yeah, and so from here they play like Phoenix City, LaGrange, Carrollton.
Right.
Carrollton's actually pretty decent, but the ones in Mississippi, everyone that sees them that goes over there with me, they're like, they can't believe how nice these parks are. And I just wondered if maybe the state funds that or something, but it would seem like to me that Auburn Opelika would pull together and get some kind of a really nice park, because I know that they get – you know, they probably get a lot through the softball tournaments and everything like that, but this could be a big place. So,
That's a really good question. I mean,
perhaps an enterprising landowner is listening right now who thinks maybe there's an angle there.
I would think it's definitely more on the communities. I don't think the state funds are really what are going to local parks.
So. You know, I've heard that if you build it,
they will come.
They will come. That's what I've heard. I've heard that before about.
Yeah, I don't know where
stadiums.
I heard that. Yeah, right.
Hey, so last year, my grandson that plays over in Mississippi, he played 10U last year, and his first at bat in a game that I went over to see, he hit a home run over the center field fence.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah. So in the last inning, they were the home team, and they were down 4-6. Mm-hmm. And the bases are loaded, and my grandson came to bat. The coach called timeout from the other team, called all his players to the mound, and the coach turned around and looked at the umpire and said, "Put him on."
Yeah, that's respect. To walk somebody with the bases loaded and a two-run lead, that's a lot of respect. So you got a little slugger.
He's 10 years old. He's not Barry Bonds.
That is cool.
He was Barry Bonds in that at bat.
That's right.
He was, and it's like, well, anyway,
it's frustrating. It's very frustrating to the 10-year-old, but I mean, it's quite a show of respect.
It gets an RBI. It helps out his fantasy owners.
But when you've already hit one, you want another one.
Helps out the roto owners with an RBI.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, great stuff, Wes. Good hearing from you. Thanks for the call.
Thank you. Bye.
334-321-1390 and
well, you'll take RBIs any way you can get them when you're.
I
me.
Know, but no, when you're 10,
when you're me,
when you're 10, if you've cranked one and you're up with the bases loaded, a chance to win the game, you want that guy throwing it because you know they're scared of you. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
And 106.7 and online. ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews here in the studio with Drew, Drew at the control. And let's get back to the drive hotline. Go ahead. You're on the drive.
Yes, Mitch in Florida.
Hey, Mitch.
Hello, Mitch.
Hey, guys. A couple things from the College World Series this weekend. I think I saw that if Tennessee can win it all as the number one seed, starting off 2-0, it'll be the first time since Miami did it in 1999.
Wow. Yeah, that is right. And you know what it would also be? It would also be the fifth straight SEC, different SEC team to win the College World Series. How about that?
Yeah, that would be amazing too. And the last thing I got watching the game last night. Did you guys notice the guy behind home plate from the pitcher's perspective to the left of the catcher with the Auburn hat and Auburn shirt on? Now was that?
Oh man! Now I missed last night's game, so I did not get to see him.
Yeah.
Who were you thinking it was?
I don't think it was Tex because I've met Tex.
I'm pretty sure it wasn't Tex. I've gotten a text or two from Tex, and he would usually let me know if he was in Omaha.
Yeah, but he was. I mean, he was there, and they were older gentlemen, and they had like different school, you know, attire on, and I was just curious if anybody knew who that was. Hmm. That was sitting behind home plate in Omaha with the Auburn gear on last night.
Well, I don't know if I've been automatically recording all the games of the College World Series. If I did, I'll go back and look at it and see if I can figure that out. Maybe somebody who's watching and knows though.
Yeah, or somebody that's listening might know. So that's really all I had. And it was fun watching the U.S. Open from my old stomping grounds, Pinehurst number two, was just right up the road where I lived for about 20 years.
Yeah.
So it was nice to see that this weekend. Tough course.
Yeah, obviously. And Bryson, you know, picking up the big win, and a lot of talk today about Rory not making the, not sticking around.
Sorry.
Yeah. that's exactly right.
I mean, it's you know, an unbelievably tough situation for Rory there to miss that putt, and it's you know, the optics of throwing your bag in the trunk and spinning your tires on your way out of town. I think especially in the especially because you have that video you've seen of how Bryson handled losing the U.S. Open not all that long ago when he finished in a really tough second place and was the first guy there to go congratulate Xander and congratulate him on his U.S. Open championship. I think folks were sort of drawing a contrast between that and the way Rory reacted to the adversity of what happened in the final round yesterday. I mean, I think that it's the story should be Bryson and not Rory. But I think that that's one of those moments that folks will remember for a really long time, not because of Bryson, but because Rory looked to be on the verge of, ending a long drought for one of the best golfers in the world for a major championship, and things went awry.
Yeah, well, I did read, I think it was a snippet from Sports Illustrated online today that Bryson had some good words to say about Rory. Even though after all of that stuff,
well, Bryson's been there. No, I mean Bryson understands. I mean he's been there, and I thought it was. I mean, a couple of years ago when Bryson, you know, mustered up whatever he could to go congratulate the winner. I'm sure it was incredibly difficult for him, and he's sympathetic with what Rory's having to deal with in the moment.
All right, guys, that's all I had. War Eagle, we'll talk to you soon.
Good hearing from you, Mitch. 334-321-1390. That is the Drive Hotline.
How about the College Football Hall of Fame stories that are out there? Because you have
the less the well, less lawsuit.
Well, you have two, right? You also have. I guess there was a conversation over the weekend. More people are making note of the fact that Mike Leach is one game away from qualifying. You know, I'll be honest. I think the 600% rule is stupid.
I do too, but the thing is, it's their
rule.
Their rule,
but it's a very.
I mean, it's not the NCAA. It's the college. It's the College Hall of Fame.
And I think
and whoever decided that they were going to have one and come up with some criteria, that would be like Major League Baseball saying, "All right, you have to have hit this many homers, or got that many strikeouts, or that many wins, or whatever."
It doesn't take into consideration that guys
where
like,
you are,
guys like Mike Leach and Howard Schnellenberger, who's also not in the College Football Hall of Fame. Because
Schnellenberger should be in the Hall of Fame.
Schnellenberger's win percentage, his career win percentage, isn't 600 because
he coached at a bunch of terrible schools,
and he built football,
turned them around.
He built football programs there at Oklahoma and Miami and FAU. And yes, his career win percentage is in the 500s. It's not at 600, mm-hmm. but he's not in the College Football Hall of Fame because of it. Mike Leach is one win shy of 600.
Are there other criteria?
There are other.
What are the other? I mean, that's the only thing I ever hear talked about.
Okay,
with coaches in the College Hall of Fame, College Football Hall of Fame, is their winning percentage.
You have to coach for
you
more.
You have to have so many years.
So the criterion singular. Mm-hmm. Okay, you have to be a head coach for more than 10 years. You have to have coached more than 100 games, and you have to have been away from the sport for more than 3 years.
Okay, so that's it. So just 10 years, 100 games. And 3 years out.
You know,
and a 60% winning percentage.
And the 60% thing feels so like you just those other three criteria are all you need.
Well, I know why they did it, because they didn't want to have how long has College Football Hall of Fame been in existence?
I don't know that off the top of my head. I can see
because
if I can find it.
Years ago there was a 10-game schedule, so they didn't want to have somebody who was not even winning 6 games a year. That just was the thought. Now, what they should have done is there should have been some extenuating circumstances for coaches that did not meet all of those. Like for what about coaches that may have coached 9 years and had met a tragic end?
Sure. No, but
you know,
why?
Those should be allowed to be in. And then coaches who were above 500 at terrible schools they were building should be allowed in as well.
An arbitrary number like this does nothing but takes power away from the voters. You say, oh, because
right.
the voters could
because
decide this.
You don't get to say who deserves
yeah.
to be in.
You, let the voters decide if Howard Schnellenberger is a Hall of Famer or not. Let the voters decide if Mike Leach is a Hall of Famer or not. And make you know, and I'm not even sure about making an exception. I just think that's a dumb rule. That 60% thing
be adjusted. There should be those are the expectations, But then you can still, you know, you'd need to justify if someone who doesn't meet any of those.
If a rule like that is taking qualified people off the ballot, it's a counterproductive rule, right? Like if a rule like that is keeping a Howard Schnellenberger or a Mike Leach or even a Les Miles, who I don't think is a is you know, I don't want to, you know, split hairs on which coaches belong in the Hall of Fame and which ones don't. But
when I look at the list of Hall of Fame coaches, I feel like Les Miles and Mike Leach are as good as some of the guys.
Sure, I feel a little stronger about Mike Leach's impact on college football, considering where he was coaching. Although Les Miles did win a lot of games at LSU. In fact, that's the other story, is that because LSU vacated 37 wins from Les Miles' tenure as LSU head coach, Les Miles now has a winning percentage under 600 in his career, and he is not eligible for the Hall of Fame. When you factor in the 37 wins,
here's the crazy thing. All right. I'm sort of with Les on this, although I don't know that I'd have sued LSU about it. I would have said, look, we won these ball games. There are coaches in here who have been on probation and have had other things. They have been charged with far more egregious things than I have. I won those games. Whether LSU vacated them or not, I won them.
Right.
I mean, I'm with him on that.
No, again, this gets back to why the reason this is a factor is because there's a win percentage rule in the College Football Hall of Fame. Les Miles, if he were eligible at 590 or whatever he's at now.
597.
597.
This is 597. He, again, is one win. One of those losses that he had, if it had been a win, then he'd be in regardless.
Well, he'd be eligible for the ballot. He would not be in.
No.
You don't automatically get in when you meet those criteria.
True, but he'd be in.
His argument is that he would get in accordingly if he met the other criteria. Although the other thing is you have to be nominated by somebody.
Right.
And the LSU departure wasn't all that great. Kansas fired him. He didn't really leave a lot of friends at Oklahoma State. Like, someone needs to nominate him in that situation, and so but yes, Les Miles suing LSU because the negated victories have removed Les Miles' have left him below the threshold for college football. The lawsuit states that Les Miles was deprived of property rights to the vacated wins and his nomination for the Hall of Fame. And it notes that the nomination for the Hall of Fame must be done by someone affiliated with an NCAA member school. So it's no guarantee even, you know what I mean? And I think it's also important, like the allegations of inappropriate conduct towards female students that ended his career at Kansas would also complicate things for his Hall of Fame candidacy potentially, but it gets back to this. This is a story because the College Football Hall of Fame has a rule requiring people to have won 60% of their games as head coaches, and that I don't know. I think it takes some qualified coaches off the ballot because they didn't. Their career win percentage maybe isn't there, but that doesn't factor in where they coached and the impact they made on those places.
This is crazy. All right, I'm looking through the list of College Football Hall of Fame coaches. There are 1, 2, 3 coaches who have winning percentages below 60%.
I believe they have made one-time exceptions
in the past. Early on, they rounded it.
Yeah.
They rounded up. If you were at 59.5%, they rounded it up and they stopped. Now, that's really bad. Yeah. If you used to round up, then if you rounded up, then both Mike Leach and Les Miles would be eligible for the College Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I'm not even calling for a one-time exception. I just think it's a dumb rule. I think it's a rule that
if you're going to have something as arbitrary as that, then you might as well round up. All right, so Carmen Kaza of Yale had a 599 winning percentage. Jerry Claiborne, now his didn't even round up. His was 59.1%. Jerry Claiborne for his career. I mean that's what are they talking about? If you're gonna let some people in with that,
I wonder if they introduced the rule after those inductions. So
yeah,
I don't know the history of.
Maybe they did because that's crazy.
But Schnellenberger and Mike Leach, especially,
you're right.
Like that's lunacy to use some arbitrary statistic to keep those guys out of the College Football Hall of Fame when I think anybody who, I mean, Bill, you observe the sport. Howard Schnellenberger and Mike Leach, like clearly Hall of Fame coaches. And it's, I mean, yeah, I would hope that, you know, that the right thing gets done there. I mean, people have been yelling about Schnellenberger for years, like really since that rule was introduced.
Yeah, you're right.
People have been saying the Schnellenberger is being sort of unfairly punished for willingly going out and building programs. And yes, you know what? If you lose 10 or 11 games in year one, because it's year one, it's tough to get to 60%.
You're right.
With those there. But that doesn't mean that you weren't a fantastic Hall of Fame caliber coach, as I think those guys were.
All right. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. We'll get to our final break of hour number one here on the Monday Drive.
Cody Dykes and the team at Superior.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, final segment of hour number one here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. And, of course, Mondays. It's great to have Brian in on Mondays because that's when the musings come out.
Sponsored by delicious Uncle Keith's Red Sauce, which I had some over the
weekend. We have a fresh new jar because nice. The last one
went away.
Oh, it yeah. Goes and way they fast. Do quickly. Yes. I mean, it's such that's such a great sort of snack. It's not quite supper time yet, or maybe it's even a little after supper time. But I mean, it's like, yeah, great stuff is Uncle Keith's.
Yes, but a terrific weekend for Auburn football and football recruiting. Had 12 visitors in to close out really there last weekend. There is a weekend available for visits this weekend, but I don't think Auburn is going to use it. I think they are done. They want to get all their guys in the first few weekends of this visit period, and now it's going to be about reeling some in on commitments and then getting as many back for Big Cat weekend on July 27th. And I have a feeling this Big Cat's going to be one of the biggest ever, just looking at some of the guys that have already said they're coming.
That's the weekend after Media Days, right? So Hugh will go.
Yes.
Saturday right
it's,
before.
Yeah, not the weekend immediately after. It's that following.
Or maybe it's – yeah. Oh, you're right. So the Media Days in the teens, right?
Right. Media Days is like the 15th or something.
You get back.
July.
I think Saturday the 20th is the Saturday after Media Days.
Saturday the next weekend. After
and then
that.
And then the 27th. Right. You just said is the Big Cat weekend. Mm-hmm. So they'll have about 8 days, 9 days from Hugh Freeze going to SEC Media Days and then turning around and welcoming a big class of recruits final month of July and then really that's the, I mean, Big Cat weekend is. It's almost like the end of the off season celebration, right? Because once they get going, once July turns to August, there's still some recruiting work, right. But they get laser focused on getting ready for fall camp, getting ready for that opening game, and you're playing a football game pretty soon.
Yeah, not much recruiting goes on in August because the high school players are going through their preseason football. Is the college teams are getting ready for
yeah. You get more once the season starts,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah, but that's when the business start taking up. But Auburn's up to 15 commitments now. And I think they could go, close to 25-ish. I think they could.
Yeah, I would think 22, 23, somewhere like that.
Just depending on who
very
they get,
reasonable.
Right? You're not going to turn down a great player.
No, just like I was thinking about this when you were talking about, they don't have any visits. If there were to be a super player were to just contact Auburn and inquire about visiting this weekend, they'd probably say, oh, yeah, you
probably
can come
figure
on
out
down.
A way to get him in. Yeah. Right. But I fully expect Auburn to be at 20 or more commitments by a few days after Big Cat, if not on Big Cat or before. I think there are several players that could commit between now and Big Cat. And I know I mentioned Herbert Scroggins from Savannah, who was here this weekend. He's a guy I think that could pop at any time, a very talented pass rusher, a guy I think who could play as a true freshman in the SEC on that defensive line because he's really talented and pretty physical for a high school player. So keep an eye on him in the near future. He does have, I think, one more visit left, but that doesn't mean he may not make a decision. You can go back about a week ago, and Broderick, the offensive lineman.
Jones? It's not Jones, is it? It's
no, Shull,
Scholl, you know, was planning to visit a couple of other schools, but went ahead and
I blanked on his last Auburn. Name. I know that he was in Freaky Friday, the musical. I know that. I know that Coach went and saw him perform in musical theater. He's a really interesting guy, isn't he? He's got a couple other outside interests in football, outside of football, but he's a thoughtful, smart, and really talented football player.
Very athletic for his size, and with him and Cardae Smith and Ty Buster and I've got a couple other offensive linemen committed too. This is a terrific offensive line class.
What do you know about
Spencer Dowland and I thought there was one more in there. Tavares Dice, that's the other one. Yeah,
we talked about it a little bit at the top of the show, but you know, I know folks are real excited about the Eric Winters commitment over the weekend. That's a nice pickup for Auburn in the defensive backfield.
Yeah, really nice size for a DB. Great athleticism. Right down the road at Enterprise, could play safety, could play nickel, could play a bunch of different positions like back there. And
heck, he's as big as some former linebackers Auburn had.
I think he's a really impact guy and a guy that can make play, be a playmaker on the defensive side.
You got a top 10 player at his position nationally playing in this corner of the state. You know, this side of the state. You know, it's important for Auburn to go after players like that because they missed out on players like that in the past.
Way too many.
All right, we'll get to our top of the hour break. Halfway done. Plenty of time for you to join in here on the Monday Drive. Hello, everybody. Welcome in to hour number two of the drive. If you were listening and didn't hear anything momentarily, we had a brief power outage. It seemed almost exactly at 5. I mean, the power to the building went out. The air conditioning stopped. The Wi-Fi went out. There was a hum for a minute, and then and then we had no power for about a minute. But just as the intro was about time for the intro to roll. Fortunately, the power came back, so hopefully we're back. And the only thing you missed was the ESPN update.
I was wearing my headphones, Bill, and I felt like a bit of a jolt. And then I saw into the future for a little while. So I don't know. It's probably no big deal, but I'm sure we'll be okay. And yeah, now metal stuff is sticking to me when I walk through the radio stations.
Maybe you're the next Marvel hero.
Yeah, maybe. Or I'm hoping maybe it's like that John Travolta movie from the 90s. I'm hoping it's like Phenomenon or something. But
it didn't end well for him
in Phenomenon.
I like that movie.
It is a good movie.
I haven't seen that in a long time.
Phenomenon's a going post pulp Travolta with the Change the World. The Eric Clapton song is a solid Clapton 90s song. Anyways, I think we're back.
Yeah, I do too. So hopefully we are. We'd love for you to join in. It's hour number two of the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from Auburn Sports. .com and Drew is at the controls again. We apologize for Friday when we could not hear calls. We have the Terry, our excellent engineer, and Riley and Ben and Jacob. I mean, everybody's been working trying to get everything back in working order, and we're able to take calls. But Friday was our first time on location, out of the studio, and for some reason we could not hear the callers when we went to field calls. We can hear in the studio, so we'd love for you to join in, and you can give us a call on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
Hour number two of the Drive, brought to you by our good friends at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And hour number one, we talked with Brian. Hopefully you had a chance to hear it. We can revisit some of that. But talk with Brian about a very big weekend that Auburn just had football. Auburn football had recruiting-wise with a dozen players coming in. One very very big commit with Eric Winters, the outstanding athlete from down in Enterprise, committing to Auburn. He's number 15 on Auburn's commit list for 2025. And that will pretty much wrap up the recruiting for Auburn until after the dead period.
Yeah, big cat coming up July 27th. But as far as visits go and getting players on campus, you know, unless there's a surprise here over this last week, some we're not suspecting, right. That'll be it.
It's a great situation to be in, though. They've had the players that they wanted in, and now, I mean, they have sort of – you've got bonus time, the time right. this weekend. Man, just think about this compared to a year ago. A year ago, Auburn was trying to catch up so much. They were so far behind, Brian. I mean, the job that Hugh Freeze and his staff have done, I believe they're caught up. That's – I didn't know that they could do that in a year.
It's tough because you're trying to recruit
– forward.
Guys for your class while other top programs are recruiting guys for the class, the next class, and the next class. And that's what Auburn and Hugh Freeze sort of inherited back when he took over, you know, in the end of November in 2022. Is that right?
Yes.
And he's slowly been building. And if you look at all the guys Auburn got in this spring, on top of the official visitors and on top of the 2025 kids that got in, they got a ton of top 26 and 27 guys in, mm-hmm. not just once or twice, but sometimes three or four times when you include the camps and all the other stuff going on. And that big cat's going to include a lot of those 26 and 27s too. So I would say they are caught up, and I would say they are now becoming that recruiting machine that Auburn hasn't been in forever.
Really. Yeah, they're sort of out there pushing, you know, right there. They're one of the leaders yes. that are out there pushing for the guys down the road for the 26, 27, and beyond classes. So I mean that's a great situation. You know, something. There really hasn't been much noise, if any, about any other additions for the 2024 class. I mean, we've talked about this, seems like, every week, but haven't heard of anybody that really, Auburn is pursuing that could be an addition to this class. But I'm sure knowing as thorough as they are, yeah. that they're keeping – you know, a finger on the pulse of
yeah.
who's in the portal and who might be able to help
if
them.
You look at the roster and the potential depth chart, Auburn could probably use another Willie linebacker for depth mm-hmm. there. They lost Steiner recently
right.
To the portal. The running back position, unfortunately, is a little thin because of the shooting that involved Brian Battee and his brother.
Right.
Maybe
a corner.
And yeah, cornerback with Colton Hood there jumping in the portal mm-hmm. here kind of late. That's a position that could use maybe another body if the right one's available. So it's just a matter of a person that can play at this level.
Well, it's also this right. is different than a year ago when Auburn was still looking for somebody for some guys that might be able to push for starting.
Right.
I do wonder if we speculated on this Friday that Justin Jones could be in line for an upgrade in how often he's utilized.
He's got to be your number four guy, right?
He'd be your number four running back now. He played on special teams on every game last year, the former Bessemer Academy running back who is on the roster. He's got 1 year left of eligibility. I believe he was he's a UAB transfer.
Yeah, he was a scholarship player at UAB, I believe.
Was a scholarship player at UAB, and so he could maybe be. I would wonder if and maybe Auburn adds a running back between now and the start of the season. But if they don't, I would suggest that maybe they feel pretty good about what Justin Jones could give them in the short term this year because he's been with the program a couple years and played a lot of special teams last season.
And we got to see him a lot this spring, and I thought he looked really good. And he's not a small guy; he's like 6'1", over 200 pounds.
Size.
Got some pretty good quickness to him.
As a walk-on running back, that's a luxury. Yeah. Like, that is a luxury to have a guy like that because he could probably be a scholarship player elsewhere in Division I college football if he wanted to be.
Yep. And, if you look at the roster, you've still got some extremely talented running backs, on the team.
You're a big Cobb believer?
I am.
Yeah.
And I also – well, Cobb is a guy that needs to get more touches, period. There's no argument there. But, I also think – when Jarquez and Damari, if they're in an offense that's more explosive, that, you know, teams can't just focus on them when they're in the game. You know, when you got a big play offense and teams have to spread out the defense a little bit to handle receivers and get down the field, I think Jarquez and Damari, when they get downhill, can be very, very good backs in the SEC. And I don't think we've seen enough of that yet. And I'm looking forward to seeing maybe this is the year they can get that going.
Well, I mean, I just feel like with the upgrades at receiver, teams hopefully, I mean, teams shouldn't just be able to load the box.
Right.
I mean, and there should be more creases, should be more holes. And I think the offensive line is going to be better, too.
Should be. And you got some big old tight ends now. You can get in that 12 formation with two tight ends and do some damage there. And, you know, like you said, I think the upgrades, bringing in Percy Lewis, moving Dylan Wade over to the left guard, getting those big, tall outside receivers that can stretch the field and make those plays down the field is going to open up that running game and make a big difference.
And I think, you know, a full-year Connor Lue being your guy at center, Jeremiah Wright, more experienced. I mean, the offensive line should be better, and they were better at run blocking than they were pass blocking a year ago. And that's with everybody knowing that, hey, Auburn pretty much they're not going to beat you throwing the ball.
Tuta Miller, of course, you would think he's going to be much better coming out of JUCO in his second year here. And then Peyton Thorne showed last year that he was a running threat. And I don't think Auburn wants to run him as much this year because they want him making good decisions and getting the ball down the field more. But still, when your quarterback can do some things, that's also an area which can help the running game.
No question about it. All right. We'd love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise, 334-321-1390 as we're just underway here in hour number two of the Monday drive. We started talking about Monday musings. I don't know that we really got into it much. You talked a little bit about your the big weekend that Auburn had, but you didn't really push Uncle Keith's or your music that you talked about in your musings.
And Uncle Keith's Red Sauce, born and bred right here in the state of Alabama. It's delicious. You can get it in town and you get all over the state, really, at the Piggly Wiggly and the Publix and the Renfro's. And I was just at Kroger's earlier today, and I saw on one of the end caps or near the end caps,
that's exactly where they have it.
Full of it, and it was looking really good and really tempting for me to buy some more today.
They got it in the local. Is it a separate one? Because I know they have Kroger has the like local made in Alabama products. Uh-huh. They have a feature on sauces and condiments and things made in the state, of which Uncle Keith's Red Sauce is, one of your, a regional product here. And
they've got, in the Publix, they've got the Uncle Keith's right there on the shelf with the other sauces.
Oh, cool. Very cool. So you can find it there in with the sauces. And, Southern style, outstanding Southern style salsa. I have not tried the hot. I have not tried the hot yet.
It's got some kick to it now.
I believe it does.
Well, because the regular's got a little.
Yeah, it does. It does.
And, I've got to have a sip of something after a little of it.
But, it tastes very fresh.
Oh, it really does.
Used to the basic salsas you've had for 10, 20 years, however long, you're going to be really surprised when you try Uncle Keith's for the first time.
Yeah, and I like one thing I like about the consistency of it also as well.
Yeah, it's delicious.
Yep.
But my Monday musings, I talked about the transfer portal and how much it's helped Auburn over the last couple of years.
Yeah, the ins versus the outs.
Yes.
The additions versus the subtractions.
Last year's group, Auburn brought in 20 guys. They combined to play in 203 games with 104 starts.
Mm-hmm.
Really contributed a whole lot to the team. And
I think they expected even more, though.
Yeah. Definitely, but mainly Peyton Thorne, Rivaldo Fairweather, three starters on the offensive line, Austin Keys, Larry Nixon, defensive line, Jalen McLeod, big, big additions to this team last year. You look at the outgoing guys, 19 left last year, only seven landed at Power 5 schools.
Wow.
And those seven combined for 62 games played in just 9 starts.
Wow.
That's the difference. And if that wasn't available to Auburn, there were 6 and 7. Oh, you're not. What would have been?
It would have been what it used to be, and that would be a slow, tedious rebuild. Yes. And you'd be, I mean, first of all, you probably wouldn't have won 4 games maybe last year,
maybe
and be
just 2 or 3,
and be hoping you get near 500.
Yep.
I mean,
exactly.
But you'd be relying on nothing but youngsters.
Right. Yep. It'd be all freshmen run around, and it would have been rough, especially on the offensive and defensive lines this year. And really, last year and definitely this year, too, that would have been a struggle on those defensive lines because that's been an area that Auburn, before Hugh Freeze got here, had struggled to recruit SEC level players on the O line and the D line, I felt like, and that was the biggest area of needs. You've seen Auburn address both lines really tremendously in both portals, and now they've also recruited those areas well, and I think those are areas that are going to continue to get better over the next 2 years.
Mm-hmm. And then your musical musing,
T.I., who's a hip hop artist from, grew up in Atlanta, where I'm from originally. Didn't know really much about him because I listened to some.
Oh, I thought you were going to. You grew up together.
No, yeah, like... no. But interesting dude known as the one of the, I guess, founders of Trap. Is it Trap?
Yeah. Atlanta. Trap. Yeah, Atlanta.
Yeah,
Atlanta.
That was an album of his, right?
A genre of, yeah. Of Atlanta hip hop. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was interesting. Went back and 20 years ago was when he filmed a introductory video inside a prison, which he wasn't supposed to do, and gotten a lot of people in a lot of trouble, mm-hmm. but it was just a way to sort of lead into what he's accomplished, which is several Grammy Awards and a lot of money he's made from his music, from starting his own label, and from appearing in a lot of films and TV, too. So he's had one of those careers over the last 20 years or so that have spanned multiple different genres.
First time I ever heard T.I., I think a lot of other folks of similar age would be, he has a guest appearance on Never Scared, the song by Bone Crusher, which still gets occasionally played at sporting events and things, especially in the Atlanta area, sort of a hype-up, high-energy hip-hop song, and T.I. has a verse on that. I think that was his first... that was the first thing he ever did that got sort of national exposure, and from that point on, I mean, from that to him having songs himself on the radio was no time at all.
Yep.
So. Rubber Band Man's probably like right after that, and then from that point on, he's been a fairly some troubling allegations recently involving T.I. that you can you can research,
yes,
but yeah, he's a very very important figure in Atlanta hip hop history.
Yeah. You know, even though this is not the music maybe I listen to, I still learn a lot.
Oh, you're really good about branching out and hitting all genres of music.
Also, he's in the Ant-Man movies, mm-hmm. as one of the comedic comic relief. He's one of the friends in the Ant-Man movies.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, he's the friend in the glasses. T.I. And he's also in ATL, the film that mm-hmm. featured a lot of the Atlanta rappers at the time. That's become a big cult classic of the time period.
Yep. All right, we'll get to our first break of hour number two. Love for you to join in, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar, or text us on the Drive text box presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, 334-564-1840.
Hey, this is Kyle Rush
with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Monday afternoon, 21 minutes after 5 o'clock. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews, and Drew at the controls. And, Dan made it through the weekend. It was a big celebratory weekend for Justin Ferguson.
I found that I am invited to the
wedding. Well, that's good to know.
That was nice. You know, there was a bit of a mystery about that, but I will be attending the Ferguson.
Did he say that he did send you an invitation?
Yes, I was.
Or was it understood?
I was invited. I think blame anyone here, but I occasionally get my
blame the mail.
I occasionally get my neighbor's mail. My neighbor occasionally gets my mail. I'm thinking this could have been one of those things that was just, you know, put in the wrong box. But it's a we were able to go to Atlanta. Did some browsing around the Battery Friday night. Went and saw the Atlanta United game on Saturday, among some other things in downtown Atlanta, and then went to a Truist yesterday afternoon to see the third game in the Braves Rays series.
Braves, after I talked about them struggling a week ago, their bats have come alive, and the Braves, what are they, won five straight now?
Five straight, last two in the, or no, they lost yesterday.
They were on a little streak, but they're hitting the ball much better.
Yes, they're hitting the ball much better, especially some of the guys have been struggling, some of the Three's Company members that had been struggling.
Well, their corner guys, especially, I mean, Olsen and Riley.
Well, and Ozzie, to an extent, right, had been struggling a little bit too, but those three, I think, were the, and with Olsen and Riley, I mean, I think that's when you get back to, it must be timing would be the thing, because a lot of the a lot of the hard hit.
They're hitting the ball hard.
Yeah,
they're just not. It wasn't falling.
But I think Austin Riley.
Austin Riley's homer in three straight games.
I think there are a couple star players, Bill, who struggled to begin this season, but I would say, especially if they're healthy, like the next 90 days could be very productive.
Well, Brian, how many times have we seen the Braves sort of just slop around for the first third to half
and
of the season?
Rolling.
Yeah.
Of course, they're missing one of their best players.
Two of their best players with Strider and Acuna.
Right, I forgot. Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah.
But they'll probably make a move at some point to bring in some help. So, you know, all is not lost.
Man, there are some significant injuries. Mentioned the Braves without Strider and Acuna. Your Dodgers seeing Mookie go down yesterday.
Mookie Betts breaking a bone.
I guess that was yesterday.
That was yesterday. Mookie taking a 99-mile-an-hour pitch off of the hand. The left.
Not a good place to catch a 98-mile-an-hour pitch with your bare wrist.
Yeah, you know what? Let me just say, there's not a good place to catch.
With a glove?
But not on the body?
No,
it's
no,
not a good place on the body.
Unless you're padded like Bonds used to be or something, and it still would probably sting.
And that, you know what? And even that wasn't hitting the body, Bill. That was hitting the elbow pad on old Barry. But Mookie Betts takes a fastball off the bottom of the left wrist as a right-handed hitter. We were looking at it, the video during the show, during a commercial break. I mean, as a right-handed hitter, your left wrist is so vitally important.
Yeah,
to
that's your power. That's your power.
That's your power and a lot of your...
That's your lead hand. That's going to be your drive. That's going to be your drive hand.
And Mookie Betts fractures a bone in that wrist, and I just think he could be back in 4 to 6 weeks.
Right.
I wonder what kind of player he'll be in the short term after that, especially after such a devastating... Now, he's a phenomenal athlete.
I mean, there aren't many guys who start their careers as a primary outfielders and become... You know, middle infielders.
Yes, I would not.
You see him go the other way.
I would not bet against Mookie Betts being able to.
No bets on Betts.
That's right. I would not bets against him because it's this is a guy who can bounce back from you know he's in position to do so. But that's got to be it's got to be extremely painful in the moment. I mean, you saw Mookie Betts double over in pain after taking that shot right to the wrist.
Well, I mean, it's going to be interesting. I mean, the Dodgers had already made a move and added Kevin Biggio.
They're going to have to go bigger than that. I wonder.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, last week because Max Muncy is taking a little while getting back. You have to wonder. I mean, we've been talking about the Braves making a move or two. The Dodgers are going to – I think the Dodgers will make a move or two themselves.
They're going to see –
They're getting some guys back now. Clayton Kershaw's not far from being back. Bobby Miller, I think, is back this week for them.
They're going to see a fella tonight. Actually, he's not in the lineup tonight, but they would be. They're in Coors Field tonight. They would be seeing Ryan McMahon under most circumstances.
Yeah, for some reason he's not in the lineup
that
tonight.
That, to me, maybe wore himself out stealing home. on Saturday, Ryan McMahon stole home in the Pirates game on Saturday. Among that explosion
that
of runs,
16-7.
The 16 one with the Tolia grand slam and the two homers from Hunter Goodman too, which I'm happy. The catcher,
you would have probably been happier if you'd had him active.
I know that's just like Drew and Tolia, but it's instead. But I could see Ryan McMahon.
Sadly, I had Jared Jones active.
I could see. McMahon has somebody we've talked about as maybe a trade.
He would make perfect sense. I mean, he's somebody who is very marketable. He's young-ish. I mean, he's not
contract.
He's not like 25. He's 27 or something.
Dodgers probably have a young piece or two. The Rockies would be happy to have in that situation.
But the Rockies have just been so hesitant to trade anybody.
How about this? If you're the Dodgers, would you move Lux in a McMahon deal?
Sure.
Like if that was part of it. I mean, not the only thing, but that'd be part of it. You know,
it might be good for a Gavin Lux to get out of L.A. where the pressure, the expectations have been so high. He was a phenomenal minor leaguer.
Go be an everyday player for a team that's not contending for a championship necessarily right now, and let a veteran like Ryan McMahon who's never played
play in that ballpark.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
so
no kidding.
No, I think there's we go.
We could be GM.
I always
wondered why. You know, there's some deals that just seem too obvious.
A name that comes to mind, but that's there's some. I would expect both the Braves and the Dodgers. Because the Braves also without Michael Harris for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, that's
no telling when he's coming back. Acuna, we already know.
The Braves have got to have an outfielder.
I mean, I think the Braves could make an outfield move or two, and maybe,
you know, the problem is, though, because so many teams in the National League are just okay, there aren't that many that are ready to sell. I mean, you've got the Rockies.
You got the Marlins, but if anybody wants the key Marlins too. I mean, we've talked about that.
Jazz Chisholm has picked it up. Jazz Chisholm has really picked it up. But the Marlins don't seem to want to trade him.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if an offer could blow them away. Like, I wonder if
I wonder
if there's anybody the Marlins like wouldn't trade on a 23-48 team that was supposed to be a lot better.
They wouldn't trade a couple of their young pitchers.
I wonder, right? I would think that. I mean, if Lizardo were better,
Lizardo's not having a good year.
No, I mean he's one of the. I mean, their closer is the most tradable piece there in Miami. But
Scott,
although Jazz Chisholm would make sense if somebody wanted to go pick him up.
Oh, there's a guy that can play outfield or middle infield.
Yes, for both. I mean, that's both a Brave or a Dodger potentially. I mean, guy could play in the outfield, could come to LA and play in the infield.
All right, so a little baseball talk there as really. That's going to be one of the main things going on for a while, as we approach July. You know, here we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Anything we'd love to talk with you. Anything on your mind, sports wise, as we head into the final half hour of the Monday Drive.
877-8744 to get started today.
The Drive continues. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final 25 minutes here on this Monday. How'd you like that, Brian? A trade made.
I like that.
While we're in the break. Some
good negotiation going on here. I'm not sure who was the winner in that one.
It'll be determined down the road.
I mean, it'll probably be in a couple of years. I'll regret.
Yeah, long term. Yeah. But you know what? You know, long term, I won't have the guy.
Yeah, you got to hold on to him after this season. So unless he's great this year, I can get another chance at him next season.
Basically a rental. Yeah,
we'll see. And you know what? And with young pitching, and with relief pitching, you know who knows?
You're absolutely right. Pitching. I mean, just when you're talking about pitching,
when Mookie Betts breaks his wrist, you know that's probably not going to be good for the guy who owns him. But this is a crapshoot.
All right, 334-321-1390. Anything you want to talk about sports wise? Let's get back and talk a little bit more, Brian, about the guys. It was hour number one about an hour ago. Some folks may not have heard. Auburn has added quite a few players, up to seven, I believe, through the transfer portal. Let's see. Have there been any more players that have gone into the portal? Auburn only had like four or five guys that I'd seen go in.
Not in the last week that I'm aware of. I may have missed somebody.
Yeah, because the portal opened on the 3rd, 2 weeks ago today. So, I mean, it looks like thus far, I mean, Chris Stanfield, the biggest name that is going in the portal. Zach Crotchfeld, what was it, Texas Tech?
I believe so.
I believe is where he went. And Auburn, in the meantime, has added three pitchers. All right, I missed a pitcher a while ago. Three pitchers, a catcher / outfielder, a couple of middle infielders, and an outfielder.
Yep. And the latest one's Bristol Carter, a center fielder, potentially leadoff guy, freshman All-American, East Carolina. Really nice pickup there. And they got Mason Koch from Creighton.
That is probably the biggest name of the when you looked at lists of players who are in the portal, available in the portal.
Yeah,
Mason's probably the biggest name that Auburn's added.
Used as a reliever mainly, but we'll get a chance to be a starter here. And 60 strikeouts and
38 1/3.
Yeah, so that's a guy that can bring it.
Yeah, that's doing it. That's better than 14. 14 and a half strikeouts per nine. Now, you don't expect that as a starter, but I mean that just gives you his potential, the idea on his potential. A guy that was used out of the bullpen in Auburn, definitely going to give him an opportunity to be a weekend starter.
Oh, absolutely. And Ryan Hetzler, who they got earlier from Cal Baptist, another guy that was mainly a reliever, but will get a chance to be a starter. Auburn's still looking for maybe a left-handed, more experienced starter in the portal. And, you know, of the guys they've added some power right-handed bats, which they needed to do. Bristol Carter, I know he didn't hit a bunch of home runs, but he was just a freshman.
Mm-hmm.
And guys like that
walk. Eric Snow has decent pop for a middle infielder.
He does, especially as a freshman was injured, I think, his sophomore year, which cut his production a little bit. And then Lucas Steele is a guy who's a switch hitter.
Right.
With some pop from either side of the plate. And it's so versatile, it could play just about anywhere on the field.
I guess, and the elder Dutton had some good, I mean, he had seven or eight homers or so this year for Birmingham Southern.
He did. He batted 340, 12 doubles, seven home runs, 42 RBIs. So some good additions. There's going to be some good competitions. You add two middle infielders. You got Guevara, the Florida transfer.
Derek
Fabian.
Yeah, I was like.
And a couple of freshmen coming in, too. So they'll all be competing for those two or three spots.
The thing Auburn's waiting to hear is, you know, Cooper McMurray's decision.
Yep. And the draft comes up in about a month now. I think it's July 12th through 14th, something like that. But I'm expecting a decision from him fairly soon.
That's right. The draft leads up to the All-Star game. That's
it
right.
It does. 14th through 16th, excuse me.
Yeah.
And everything I'm hearing, probably leaning toward returning, but no decision made yet.
Well, I'm sure it has nothing to do with his appearance on this show, and we'd love to have him back. Hope to have him back, but everything I've heard is that if he decides to stay in college, it's most likely gonna be here.
Yes. Oh yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think that's the plan. And getting him, Cole Ballou back.
Yeah, Cade,
Irish back. Yeah. Those are three really good left-handed bats in the lineup, and Cade, of course, really came on as a true freshman. It'll be exciting to see what he can do as a sophomore.
Golly, because usually you look, and the biggest step in any sport, and it's funny, we're talking, you know, when we talked to Don Dunn about this, and other coaches will tell you that the step from year one to year two is usually the biggest improvement, the biggest jump that you're going to see. And that was one of the things. It's funny. It's one of the things when I was spending a little time with Wimp Sanderson on his show, he said that's one of the most frustrating things about the current transfer portal is that so many players are in year one multiple times.
Yeah,
because if you go somewhere and you're only there for a year, then you're starting over when you go to the next place, and you might miss out on that opportunity for that big step that you take. And that's why he and so many people are proponents of at least a way for schools to be able to try to have a player for 2 years. Maybe not make it mandatory, but make it optional for there to be two-year deals with players.
It seems like there's pretty widespread opposition to freshmen. I mean, at least among administrators and coaches, it feels like there's opposition to freshmen being able to leave and retain their immediate eligibility, right? It'd be okay in a situation where if you were signing with a school as the D1 school, should you be signing your first 2 years as a D1 athlete to that school right out of, you know what I mean? Like, is there, because it does seem to hinder development when freshmen.
It does. I mean, and it's funny, and you know, I've been one who's more on the side of, boy, I'd like to see him stick around for a second year, but I don't know that I want to lock that in as a mandatory thing. I think it should be, all right, you can give them that option, but the school's got to guarantee a certain amount of things over what they would for a player who could transfer after a year.
Interesting. So you think there should be concessions from the school if an athlete is going to sign away their first 2 years coming out of high school? You find some way for the school to sweeten the deal for the athlete in particular.
Does that sound crazy, Brian?
No, it doesn't sound crazy at all.
You give a little, you get a little, right? I mean, it's a negotiation.
That's the way it is in the real world. I mean, that's the way it is in professional sports.
It's difficult to get something for nothing.
Yeah.
Generally speaking.
Guys who are signed to one-year deals generally don't have guarantees that the ones that sign multiple.
Unless you're trading with me, in which case you can get something for nothing a couple of times. That's worked out that way a couple of times.
You've gotten something for nothing quite a few times.
I've gotten something for nothing occasionally, too.
All right, but yeah, so that's
giveth and it taketh away.
So we will see how things go. But yes, it appears back to Auburn baseball. I mean, they're going to have quite a few options to be looking at. I mean, a big, highly touted class.
Yes.
Coming in with a lot of pitchers.
12 pitchers. Three of the top players in their class are pitchers. So that's going
to
be
a couple of those guys. They've got to wait and see what happens with the Major League Draft.
That'll be interesting to watch, of course. Yes, but
I mean, and that's something that we've had times in the past and coaches in the past that didn't want to really deal with those guys. It's sort of along the lines. I mean, we can shift this back to other sports, if you will. But I mean, it's a risk when you sign a player that is a very talented player that could go high in the draft. You look right now, and one of the best players in Major League Baseball is Gunnar Henderson.
Yep.
I mean, there is a shortstop with 22 home runs for the Orioles right now, who was an Auburn signee. But I would rather sign those guys, and sometimes they don't get drafted by the team or get quite the deal that they want, and they want that opportunity to experience college, and you get those guys.
Exactly. It's worth taking that risk, but you just need to understand the risk and have options available if it doesn't come through. And, you know, some teams have profited a lot, like LSU and some of the top teams in the country off guys deciding to skip the draft or – maybe tell teams in the draft that, you know, I'm not going to sign unless I get this much, and they don't get that much, so they end up in schools.
Or it could be a team they just don't want to play for.
Yep.
So, I mean, it gives you that option. But yeah, it'll be interesting because Auburn's got a couple of signees that could be fairly high draft picks this year. But they've got some guys. You mentioned some of the bats coming back for this next year. I mean – it'll be really interesting to see the competition, see who's around and the competition there is this fall. 334-321-1390, but that sort of got me thinking, Brian. Yeah, the difference. We were talking a while ago about the job that Hugh Freeze has done transforming this roster, and you were talking about the transfer portal, but the recruiting mentality. Auburn has had staffs and approaches at times in the past where, well, it's not worth the effort going after so-and-so. We're probably not going to get them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, seriously.
I know.
And that sounds crazy, but that has been the case.
And I also thought there have been times in the past where Auburn's gotten played over and over again.
Yes.
Right? They have a commitment from somebody. Yeah.
Fooled me four times. Yeah. It ain't even shame on me anymore.
And you know this guy's going to flip at some point.
Yeah, she's not going to pull the football away this time.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I'm going to kick this field goal.
Or some guy gives you one of his four visits, and you know you're probably third or fourth on his list, but you know he's your top guy. But that's not happening anymore.
And the other thing was, that would be your top guy, and then in the meantime, you'd let the number two or three guys go, or you wouldn't even pursue anybody. And then when you didn't get that top guy, you had no other options.
Yeah, and this staff is winning those recruiting battles against other top teams across the country. They're recruiting nationally. You look at their commit list, you know, guys from California, Colorado, the guys they're bringing in from all over, from up there in Baltimore. You know, maybe get two kids out of Baltimore this year, and of course –
Alabama, I sure hope they do.
Georgia, surrounding states too. So that's definitely changed. And the most important thing to me for Auburn recruiting has always been getting kids on campus. And this staff excels as getting
kids on campus. Man, they are getting the traffic.
Multiple times too on those visits to games, to junior days, to camps, back again for official visits and closing the deal. So I think the staff is excellent recruiting, and it starts at the top. Auburn hasn't had a coach like Hugh Freeze as far as being that personable guy that can recruit from the front. You know, doesn't rely on his assistants to do the job. Maybe since Pat died. Back then, recruiting was totally different.
Yep.
And you didn't have to do it that way. Nick Saban changed it back in the early 2000s at LSU, and Auburn has not really been able to adapt for other than a short period under Gene Chizik, who –
Well, you need a head coach who is the point man. Right. I mean, who not just the closer, but I mean, is, you know, everybody knows, he is a recruiter 24/7, day, night, 24/7. I mean, and that's Hugh Freeze.
It is, and he does a terrific job. If you watch him work at camp or, you know, visitors,
he's
never on the phone.
Yep. Either talking or texting,
talking
a
to
recruit.
Kids, talking to coaches, talking to parents, gets them up on their deck, comes walking around and watches this guy going through a drill while he's talking to another person's parents. You know, it's just constantly working it, and he is terrific at doing that. He excels at his being able to make those connections with people and talk to them and convince them that Auburn is the right program for them to attend.
Hugh Freeze has been in a situation at Auburn, at Liberty, at Ole Miss, at Arkansas State. Hugh Freeze has been in situations where he's had to try to beat teams that had better players than he did. And I think he's decided it's a lot easier. you can try to scheme your way out of beating teams with superior talent. You can try to neutralize that with
Jimmies and Joes help those X's and O's.
Yeah, but it's probably a lot easier to do it when you got equal or better talent than the best teams on your schedule, and that's what Hugh Freeze is trying to do on a schedule that has Alabama and Georgia among other SEC heavyweights.
It really is, and it done a terrific job, and they're going to have a second consecutive top 10 class, and you know this class certainly has potential to be higher than that too. We'll see.
All right, we will get to our final break of the afternoon. Still time for you to join us as we head into the home stretch of the Monday Drive.
Experience and knowledge. OU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final segment here on this Monday, and we have another caller on the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Hi, go ahead. You're on the drive.
Hey, this is Matt. You guys hear me?
Yes. Yeah, we got you, Matt.
Hello,
how you doing?
I'm good. I had a quick question. You guys may have answered this question last week. How can you have co-coaches, head coaches in softball? Don't you have to have a guy or gal in charge who makes all is that just in name only, or are they going to both take head coaching responsibilities?
That's a really good question, and the media is going to have an opportunity tomorrow morning, I believe, Brian, to meet with Team Malvo. Well, they came from a place, Matt, at Kentucky, where they had done it for 20 years. They had had a husband and wife team until Patrick decided to retire, even though apparently he's still helping out. And when we talked with John Cohen the other day, he said it's something that is more common in softball. You don't see it really. I guess I've heard of it in gymnastics a couple of times, but it's more common, he said, in softball. And it'll be interesting to hear. Yeah, you would think that you would expect one person making the call, but I guess as long as they're on the, you know, on the same wavelength, it is an interesting situation.
Yeah. Does that save any money having two head coaches and maybe not because you're only slotted so many coaches, right? Or is it actually?
No, I don't think that's a way around your maximum coaching staff. I think you still are limited to the number of coaches that you are able to have, you know. Full time.
I think, and they're both known as big recruiters too.
Especially Chris. I mean, he's the one that he has a longer reputation as an outstanding recruiter.
I can't help but wonder if this is a situation too where these two work better together, but because they're a married couple, maybe the dynamics were that one of them shouldn't work for the other one. It's better off as a partnership at the top, you know, and so, you know, I don't know exactly the dynamics. I imagine they have a plan for in-game situations. Maybe they have a designated tiebreaker if they think, you know, if they want to do different things. Maybe they'll break out the Magic 8-Ball or something to do these things. I don't know, but it is it's an interesting experiment in the most competitive, maybe the most competitive league in any sport in all of college athletics, the new SEC in softball.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Appreciate the call, Matt. Yeah, it is interesting, and we will see, you know, how things go. But when I saw the news, I went, oh yeah, and I had to look and see where that has been the case, but it's been successful.
And Chris's name had been linked to some pretty prominent jobs over the last couple of years as a possible candidate, including when Philip Marshall had his hot board of Auburn potential targets for the softball job. Chris Malvo was near the top of it initially.
Yeah. So, it'll be very interesting to follow. Brian, just about out of time here on the Monday Drive. Let everybody know how they can keep up with everything and what all's on tap there at AuburnSports.com.
We'll continue to cover recruiting. I would expect some commits coming in maybe this week, in the coming weeks. And keep an eye on the baseball portal. I'm going to have a full update on baseball and their additions for tomorrow morning. And anything else that pops up Auburn athletic-wise.
Any more, any summer rundowns? I know you guys had one last week. Got another one?
We'll get together tomorrow, I believe, for a rundown. And you continue to follow me at AuburnSports.com and on Twitter and X and Threads at BMATAU.
Sounds good. Again, let's see. We should have our regular shows here for the next couple of days. Like I mentioned right at the top of the show, I've got an opportunity. I'll be at the MLB game at Rick Wood on Thursday. Hopefully can check in.
And then
you're headed out Friday,
yeah,
right?
I've been drafted into my I'm going to go with my dad to the – so it's the Raymond family reunion. My dad's mother was one of six children, and they have an annual gathering every couple of years. And so we're going to go.
That's good.
Going to go represent, you know, my late grandmother at the Raymond family reunion up in Lexington, Kentucky this weekend.
That's good. So that's the plan for the rest of the week. We're out of time, though, here on the Monday Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.